Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is it. The time has come.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
The right hand puts him down.
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Adam Catterall and Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that.
On Talk Sport.
Welcome to the Fight Night podcast on Talk Sport with me, Gareth A. Davis, and my usual mucker, Adam Catterall. Well, first this week, I was lucky enough to catch up with Kell Brook in the Mood, the former welterweight world champion, and after that amazing victory over Amir Khan in February, to tell me that it was time to hang up the gloves. Here's what he had to tell me in an exclusive chat.
Kell doesn't need it, and he'll assess it in, I think, the next couple of weeks, and whether he has one more or two more, I don't know.
Most fighters, you know, the sport retires them. You know, I'm retiring from the sport, you know, on a serious high.
Just absolutely battered. Kell Brook, 10 months of inactivity, and it's over in around 4.5 minutes.
Brook is the toughest opponent that Crawford has fought.
Correct.
The toughest opponent.
Kell Brook does make a triumphant return to the ring and in front of his Sheffield fans.
All on the lights.
They're going to get fireworks, they get chocolate brownies, they're going to get drama, they're going to get wobbly legs from him. It's all going to be happening.
And the referee has stopped it, and Kell Brook has won this battle of bad blood. The longest running feud in British boxing has been settled, and it is Kell Brook who is hoisted onto the shoulders of his trainer, Dominic Ingle.
It's been my life. This day's finally come, you know, where, you know, I've got to retire from boxing. You know, I believe that there's nothing else to gain from boxing, and I've spoke to my family, and to leave the sport on such an high fight, what I've wanted for all them years, and you know, it's hard, but there's nothing else for me to do, you know, and gain in this sport, really.
You told me a couple of days ago that you know your heart's not in it, even though there's still lucrative fights out there. People have been talking about you and Conor Benn, you and Chris Eubank. The heart's not there.
My heart's not there, you know, for it. You know, what I put into training camp, how much that's all I've ever wanted on my resume. You know, the grudge match with Khan, won the world titles, being in them big fights. And, you know, my heart's not really in it anymore. You know, I'd be doing it for wrong reasons.
So February, March, April, it's, you know, kind of 10 weeks after that fight, if that feeling would have returned, yeah?
Yeah, I would have known. You know, they mentioned all these names, and there's many other names, what you haven't mentioned, you know, I could fight anyone after that last win, you know, but, you know, even that, you know, it's just something within where, you know, the love's gone.
So many fighters are still tempted back for another one. Do you think you will be down the line or not?
I don't think I will. You know, who knows what's today's not what's tomorrow, but, in my heart, and it's been there for a while. You know, I've been undecided, but speaking to me immediate family and you know, I think it's time, you know, that we hang the gloves up, you know, and competing, you know, myself.
What was the reaction from the whole family when you said, you know, I think that's it? Were they happy about it?
Yeah, my mum especially, you know, she's very happy that, you know, because we all know it's a sport we can legally get killed in. And, you know, she's happy that I've got away with my faculty intact and I've done what I've done in the sport. I'm just hope that I've entertained all the fans over the years. And, you know, that's the main thing, you know, and it's set me up, you know, for life. And it's, you know, it's a sport I love. You know, I've hated it at times, but, you know, this is boxing and it comes with the territory, doesn't it?
When have you hated it then?
You know, I've just stated, you know, the losses and, you know, sometimes the training, getting the weight off and, you know, the negotiations, what, you know, do your head in. And, you know, there's many spins. It's never straightforward boxing at this level.
Mm.
You know, so there's all that was, you know, what I've, in you know, took in over the years and had to deal with. And I've just come to the stage where, you know, I just can't do it anymore.
8 years old, you walked into the gym, wasn't it?
Nine.
Without boxing, do you think you might have had a troubled life?
Yeah, I think I would have. You know, the area where I'm from and the people I know, I think that I probably will have got involved with doing the wrong things. And I really, yeah, I do. I think boxing and Brendan Ingalls, you know, saved my life. You know, taught me self-discipline, taught me to a routine to get into the gym and a goal and to get better and to watch this fighter and that fighter and study it and all my body and mind and everything was, you know, in boxing, indulged in it. So, you know, I do believe that, you know, boxing has definitely saved me.
You said that you needed that Khan fight. You needed to settle the feud. Do you think that's what's helped you think this is it, really?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think that I've said it on many interviews before that I've done absolutely everything. And the fans wanted that fight so bad, and you know I wanted to give that fight for the fans so bad, and now I've done it. I'm just at peace with myself. You know, I feel at peace that I've had a fantastic career. You know, won world titles abroad and been in with Golovkins and Spencers and Crawfords and big names, and I think that was the one I needed. You know, on my resume, I needed that fight for me.
Nothing to prove, no regrets in the career, no?
I don't think so. I don't think there's, you know, there's some fights that I've wanted, but like this politics, I'm still, you know, involved in some big fights. And, you know, I'd probably say that my name's, you know, one of the high names in the sport at the top. So, you know, I think that I've done a good bit in the game.
How would you like to be remembered as a boxer, as a fighter, as a pugilist, as a prize fighter?
Someone what wanted to give the fans everything they wanted, you know, the fights, the excitement. You know, I've never shied away from any fight. Just being, you know, just entertaining, you know, being in some good fights. You know, fans enjoying out my style and, you know, just excitement, you know, giving the fans what they've wanted, you know, when they tune in. Excitement and pleasing for them. I always like to believe that when they've left, you know, the arena after watching me, that they've had a great night. They've enjoyed the undercard and they've enjoyed the main event, watching me knock someone out, hopefully.
Well, some great stuff there from Kell Brook, and amazing to hear him with such lucidity and clarity about the end of his career. I'm sure all of us will wish him all the best in his new journey, his new pursuits, and also praise him for stepping away at the right time. Well, next up, we joined Craig Richards, who had some amazing things to tell us, breaking down what it was like being in the ring with Dmitry Bivol, and then, of course, how excited he is to be proving himself in the Lion's Den against Joshua Boazzi in the fight coming up.
position. He hurt Kittison down there, and he follows it up, and Kittison's on shaky legs.
All the other domestic clashes I had after I beat them, they never age well, because afterwards they said, oh, they must not have been that good anyway.
That's what we want to see from Craig Richards. When he does it, he looks good, he looks spiteful. That's the kind of tempo we want to see him fight at.
Once I beat him, I think I'll get credit, and I think people will be like, right, the winner of this is going to be the number one light heavyweight in the country.
Tetris caught in the spider's web. Craig Richards is the British champion. What a fight.
Was very good. He's got very fast hands and he's got very good footwork and he's very clever. I feel like when I fought him, it looked like a lot of times in the round there wasn't a lot going on. That's because we both had a very high IQ, so we're nullifying a lot of the stuff we do to each other. And also I got good footwork as well, so I was able to stay with him backwards and forward. And if you look at all of his previous fights, the other opponents wasn't able to do that. I think that's why I probably drew him to the closest decision he's had. But generally he has got good footwork and good hand speed, and it's hard to keep up with that if you haven't got that. And I think people are underestimating Bivol dramatically because of the fight with myself, where I took over for the back half of the fight. I think people are now looking at it like, well, Craig could do that, look at Canelo will stop him. And I think that's where they're underestimating him, but he's very good and he's a sharp shooter.
How mentally taxing is a fight like that compared to the physical taxing that is normally on you?
Well, mental is always harder than the physical, but I feel like where the thinking game for myself, I don't really struggle that much with it. So it wasn't too much of an issue for myself. Why? Obviously, I was growing into the fight as the fight went on, but generally, people do find it hard to concentrate for that long period of time, so it does get taxing on people mentally. And Bivol does stay switched on. He rarely makes any mistakes as well. And I think if you look at Canelo's previous opponents, they all boxed very well, but they made a few mistakes. And when he made a mistake, he capitalised on them. And I'm not sure Bivol will make that many mistakes tonight.
The funny thing is about him, Craig, and you know, you'll forgive me for saying this, he kind of knew against you. He used his experience against you, didn't he? I mean, the guy's had nearly 300 amateur fights. Let's make this clear. And he kind of controlled, again, I say this with respect to you, he controlled the tempo of the fight. You and I spoke afterwards anyway, and you said, God, that was such a learning fight for me. I wish I'd had five more fights before I'd stepped in there with him and against someone of that level. And you knew that night afterwards, I was sitting with your mother beside me on my right-hand side. You knew that that was a fight where when you go into a world title again, you'll have learnt so much from it. What I fear for Bivol in this fight, he's got a very long torso, and those body shots from Canelo might tell in this contest.
Well, yeah, that's the only thing I worry about Bivol. With Bivol, as I said to you, early on the round, it took me a while figuring him out. And as I said, it was a lot of thinking games, so there wasn't much action, even for either of us compared to our previous fights. If you look at his previous to my previous fights, we both had a lot more action in our fights previous to each other. But I did notice as I started getting to him, if you notice, like 9, 10, 11 and 12, I was able to go to the body. And I think that's where Canelo will execute a lot earlier, what I didn't do.
Well, because it was literally, like you say, it was kinetic chess, you and him early on. And I think this fight tonight will be that. And it's probably round 7, 8 to 12 that will probably decide it.
Yeah, I think so. It all depends on how Canelo does take his power at light heavyweight, because I know that he was up technically on the scorecards against Kovalev. Yeah. I thought Kovalev was dominating that fight with his boxing, his jab and his size, although he did get caught in the 11th. But I feel like throughout them rounds, his size and boxing was able to dominate Canelo.
So yeah, but you'd have knocked out Kovalev at that stage as well, because we all know that he wasn't the Kovalev of old.
Nah, he was shot. By then, he had, out of like his last seven, he had been knocked out three times in his last seven. And before that, he was the crusher, undefeated for like 10 years. So we know that that was an over-the-hill Kovalev. So the only thing we can take from that is that before of him and his boxing was able to nullify Canelo. Canelo wasn't able to walk him down like he does at the other weights. Now we're dealing with a guy who's fresh and young, who isn't shot and over-the-hill, that Canelo's going to have to deal with, who ain't just going to just take one shot and go over. Well, we don't know. Boxing's one of them ones. We never know. But we're assuming that he's fresh and he's young and he won't be able to just... it's not a shot fighter at this point.
But also Bivol, sorry, Ed. But Bivol, I think, has gone 12 rounds in his last six. He's very... I'm praising him because he's fighting tonight, right? I'm not comparing him to the fight with you. He doesn't look like he does anything brilliantly, but he looks like he does everything, steady. Like you said, proficiently steady and comfortably.
Yeah, he does do some things brilliantly in terms of he's got very good hand speed, very good, and his defensive, his guard is very tight and strong. Mm. It's a lot tighter than probably anyone I've been in the ring with. His defense is a lot tighter than he looks. That's why people don't really throw a lot at him, because he nullifies that in his defense, and he's got very fast hands on his offense. But in the same breath, it's very readable sometimes. He doesn't have a wide variety. He does what he does very well, but he doesn't have a lot in his arsenal. Mm. It's kind of the same shot patterns. Mm. 1-2 left hook, 1-2.
Left hook, one, yeah. Two, left strong hook, right two. Hand.
Yeah, and I think with a fighter like Canelo who reads and counters, see, I was able to read it to avoid any serious danger, but Canelo will read it and counter off of it. With the difference of the experience of when I boxed him to the experience of Canelo now, Canelo will be able to counter off all things he reads, which I would be able to do probably at this stage in my career. At that stage, I didn't capitalize on, but I think Canelo will be able to probably capitalize on the shot variety not being very wide.
Very good. Listen, are you picking Canelo then to win it?
As I said, it all kind of depends on how Canelo deals with Bivol's power and size at light heavyweight, because he's not a natural light heavyweight, but on paper you would favour towards Canelo.
And also on paper he's such a favourite in the sport. I mean, I've written a column today talking about how there's a real danger of a controversial win for Canelo here, even if a lot of us feel that Bivol's won 7 or 8 of the rounds.
I believe that as well. If it goes to the scorecards, I believe that Bivol will win most of the rounds, but I don't think he'll get the decision.
Boxing it wherever thus, eh?
Let's talk about you, Craig. Obviously, May 21st, we've been talking about it on this show for a long period of time, about the British light heavyweight scene being red hot, and all we want is the guys to start fighting each other. Well, it started over the last year or so, and now we've got a cracker between yourself and Josh Bowatsi. You've just been speaking about your experiences with Bivol there. How much, learning from that fight, does that put you in a wonderful, wonderful position now to get a job done against what many would class as a marquee name, especially on the British light heavyweight scene?
Oh, it'll put me in good stead. But as you lot guys know, I've obviously been in these domestic clashes for a long time in my career. At every stage of my career, I fought a guy who possibly was a favourite as I was coming through domestically as I've climbed the ladder. So it's not new to me, in the sense of another domestic clash. From when I was 6 fights in, I was fighting guys 12-0, 6 knockouts in Higgins. And obviously I took the one on short notice. Then I boxed obviously Jake Ball, who's 12-1. Then I boxed Sterling 10-0 at the time, who called me out. Then I boxed Shakan Pitters, who was top 5 in Britain, as well as Jake. He was 14-0, 6'7". So it's not new to me to be boxing domestic clashes. It's just like now I'm at the stage where I feel like I'm at the top of the tree of the British domestic scene, and so is Joshua Bowatsi. That's the bridge I've got across now.
Excuse me. I loved a bit of venom with you and him at the press conference, though, because it's not something that we see from either of you. You're both very cool, calm and collected people, you know, kind of totally chilled out, languid guys, you know, let their fists and arms and bodies do the talking. But there's genuinely, is it the top lion in the jungle feeling with this?
That's the best way to put it. It's not personal in character-wise. It's like, I don't like him and he doesn't like me in personality-wise or anything like that. Or he's been getting on my nerves, calling me out and disrespecting me on Twitter, how people usually end up in these sort of situations. It's literally, I feel I'm the king of the jungle. He feels he's the king of the jungle. I'm in his way. He's in my way. And we need to get through each other to get to the next stage. And we both understand, as you say, we are basically the two top lions now. So we're in for a fight and we need to get each other out of the way, pretty much is how we think of this. And that's what it is. It's just business and personal. And we're both very ambitious and both need to move on to the next stage. And I didn't come this far. As I said earlier, I've boxed a lot of domestic clashes, a lot of underdog fights to get myself to this position. And I want to push on from here. So I need to get him out of the way. And I'm sure he feels the same.
And there's a lot of whispers in the boxing world. Canelo comes through Bivol tonight. It is signed, I understand, for Gennady Golovkin in September in Las Vegas for the super middleweight belts. There is talk that Eddie Hearn is bringing Canelo to the UK in December. If you beat Boazzi, it puts you in the frame.
Yeah, exactly. And this is why all of these fights that I've had, that's when it all comes into play. And I believe that this fight's come at the right time, because we'd say that Boazzi's up there, maybe fringe world, however, it's arguably of where you want to place him. But it is the stage what will get you ready for the big boys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Well, also on the show on Saturday night, we caught up with Joe Cordina, who fits in with the world scene. He's got a world title fight coming up in Cardiff, at Super Feather, of course, and also the prospect, potentially, that he could face Shakur Stevenson, who holds two of those Super Featherweight belts.
I've thought about this opportunity and this moment for a very, very long time, years, in fact, and now it's here. So for me to sort of think this is my moment, this is what I've been waiting for, I still haven't got my head around it, because it's just like it don't seem any different. But obviously I've got this opportunity now. It's in Cardiff, my hometown, and it's for a world title. Like you've mentioned previously, then I boxed in the Principality Stadium, and that was in my hometown. And the only thing that would have topped that would be fighting for a world title. And here it is. I'm fighting for a world title in the Motorpoint Arena. Don't get me wrong, it's no Principality Stadium, but it's in my hometown, and I get a chance to become a world champion in my hometown.
Well, I was there for Liam Williams and Chris Eubank Jr. recently, and it wasn't half a bad atmosphere in there. You know?
No, I was there that night, and I gotta admit, it was electric.
Yeah.
It was electric.
Tell me about the move to obviously we know you as a lightweight, but the move to Super Feather. A very smart move in my view. Was that a strategic move because of the position of the divisions? Where the opportunities might come at world level, which conversation with Eddie, how did that come about?
To be honest, Gareth, it was a bit of both of the opportunities and, put it this way, I thought I was dieting properly, which really and truly I wasn't. I think it was the Andy Townend fight. I made the weight very, very comfortably, and I didn't have to train from the Wednesday. So I thought, okay, it was a fluke. I'd done it on the Gavin Gwynn fight. So after the fight, they said, listen, I think the best opportunities, and with you making the weight so comfortably, I think we should try you down at Super Feather. because you're making it easy. You're only like a pound and a half at one of the fights. I can't remember which one off super feather.
Were you really? So even though you were fighting lightweight, so you were 131 and a half, not 135. Yeah.
Yeah. So like one of the weight cut, just like obviously you do the little the weight cut the night before or whatever, having a little skip or whatever, and I was 131 and a half or maybe 132 max.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, I gotta eat. So I'm eating, drinking, and then obviously I went to Super Feather, I went over to Monte Carlo and boxed Tinoco, and I made that comfortable. And when I weighed in, I weighed under the limit. Eddie went, "Do you reckon you can make featherweight for Josh Warrington?" And I said, "You give me the Josh Warrington fight, so I'll make it tomorrow." But obviously, yeah, I think featherweight would be a bit of a push. But super featherweight, I think, don't get me wrong, it's not easy, but it's not out of reach where I've got to put my body in like a proper distress. Yeah. I ain't got to do that. So I do it all properly. And now it's not, like I said, it's not easy, but it's easier than what I was doing when I was not doing it correctly at lightweight.
Looking at the style of Ogawa, I just watched the Azinga Fazile fight. Obviously he's a crouching, tricky southpaw that Ogawa was fighting. He's a much more direct fighter the IBF champion, the Japanese. It must feel like, yeah, this is a style I can become world champion against.
Yes, of course. Obviously, I've seen people like him through the amateurs. There's not many styles I've come across or I look at and I see that I haven't come across any amateurs. So, over 12 rounds, it's a different ball game. But he's got two arms, two legs, and he bleeds the same way as I do. So, and that goes for anyone in the division. They're no different. Don't get me wrong, they got some got better skill sets than others, some are tougher than others. But he's someone that I look at and think, is he quicker than me? No. Is he technically better than me? No. Can he punch harder than me? Probably, his record says. Mm. I know I'm not a one punch knockout artist, and I know that. But every time I do land on you, it's gonna hurt, and eventually it will have effect. But then I look at all the other factors. Can he fight on the inside better than me? No, he can't. So when I add all that and put it into one, when I think about it myself, my chances are very, very high winning this fight. So yeah, he's a good fighter. He's a solid fighter, and I think if he didn't have this first defense against me, I think he would have been a solid champion for a couple of years until he unified against the likes of Shakur or someone else, whoever had the other title, Gutierrez.
Yeah.
But he's fighting me, and I fancy my chances. And like Muhammad Ali said, there's no reward without risk. So, so that's why I've had 14 fights now. I believe this is my time, and it's the right time. Like you said, I'm 30. And I'm mature in what I do, in everything I do. I train properly. I don't mess around. I get everything done properly now. And I know there's no room for slip-ups. And I got to take every fight. If it's my world title, obviously this is my world title fight, and this can set up my family's future. So yeah, I got to make sure I grab this opportunity with both hands.
You win the world title on June the 4th, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've just seen Shaka Stevenson fight Oscar Valdez. He looked phenomenal. I think we all know he's a massive talent.
Yeah.
Know how ambitious you are, Joe.
Yeah.
Is that someone on your radar that you want to fight?
Of course. Listen, I'm not going to lie and say he's this, that, and the other. He's unbelievable. He's a great fighter. And like I said, I ain't gonna lie. I'm a fan of his. I'm a boxing fan. We was in the Olympics together, and he's phenomenal in what he does. And yeah, I give credit where it's due. He's a great fighter. So yeah, I'd want to test myself and get in there with the best, because without, like I said, without risk, there's no reward. And if I want to be down in the history books, I'd have to beat someone like that, like Shakur Stevenson. So, yeah, it's a big ask. It's a big ask and it's a big task. But it's not going to be as easy as a lot of people think it would be for him. Because as tricky he is, I can be also tricky. And I can be patient. I can do all the things that he can do. Don't get me wrong, he's proved it. I'm yet to do that at the highest level. So, yeah, obviously when I, June the 4th, that's where I got to prove that I'm in that same caliber.
Great stuff there from Joe Cordina on top form. Well, Adam caught up with Paul Butler, of course, who has been installed as a world champion because of the failings of Casemiro. Here's what he told Adam.
Buzzing, mate. Absolutely buzzing. Obviously, everyone knows what's gone on since last December. And then obviously what happened in Liverpool. So it's finally sunk in and I'm made up. The WBO finally made the right decision.
Obviously, you had to wait, 10 days, 2 weeks since your performance against Jonas Soltz. And we'll talk about that performance because it was superb in Liverpool that particular night where you were crowned interim champion and it's obviously been upgraded this week. But does this time taste better than the first time when you beat Stewie Hall, 8 years ago?
Yeah, definitely. Because when I beat Stewie Hall all them years ago, I knew I was giving the belt up. So it was like, oh, another title, even though it was a world title, I was giving it up. And then he had a really tough fight with Zolani Tete. And then it was just a rebuilding. I was rebuilding again from then till Rodriguez. And then obviously the Rodriguez fight came around with 4 weeks' notice. So that's a different story. But it does feel a lot better now because I know I'll be going into the ring as a champion, as a world champion, which I haven't done before. So I'm buzzing about that.
How much did those first experiences now give you a new appreciation for what becoming world champion is? Because last time you were a young lad, like you've just said, you were collecting titles every single fight that you walked into. And I suppose maybe at that time you could take it for granted a little bit that, it's just a world title, mate. You know what I mean? This is what I'm supposed to be doing. Does this give you a new appreciation for what this is?
100%. Like you say, I was young. I was a boy. I was up, I was down the weights. I was winning British titles, Commonwealth titles, intercontinental titles. It was all so, so fast. I just went from 0 to 100 like that. And it just didn't all seem real at the time. And obviously it didn't seem as real because within the month, I'd give the title up. I got a phone call. I was at a festival in Croatia. And I got a phone call saying, now you've given up the IBF title, what's your plans? And I was like, oh, I didn't know I'd give it up. So it did happen literally all that quick. I'll appreciate this a lot more than I did the IBF all them years ago.
When you did relinquish that first title, obviously you just mentioned there that you went into a fight with Zolani Tete, and nobody knew who Zolani Tete was at that particular time. The point for you was to become a two-weight world champion, to go down to your more normal weight and become a world champion there, a vacant title against Zolani Tete. It didn't go your way. And then obviously there's a rebuilding process, you run into Manny Rodriguez. And then, is there a point along this journey, because it's been 8 years, has there been a point, because it must be mentally tough that, to deal with becoming world champion, relinquishing it, because nobody beat you, to relinquish it and then go into two further world title fights for them not to go your way. Was there a point along that journey where you're thinking, I'm just going to jack this in?
COVID nearly killed us, mate. Nearly killed us. When COVID first started, I thought this will be a 2 week, 3 week period. This, and we'll be back in the gym.
Yeah.
Mate, I carried on training when the first lockdowns came. And then I started to realise this is going to last a while, you know. And then lockdowns got lifted, put us into another one. I thought, wow, I was like 32. And I was like, is this ever going to happen? Like, I thought, right, here we go again. And then obviously the Casemiro thing happened again. And I was like, wow, am I ever going to catch a break here? And then it happened again in Liverpool. But in Liverpool, I had it off in the back of my head that he might fail weight, he might not. So we always had Sultan in Dubai. We knew nothing about Agbeko until we got in the lift about 4 days before. And they were like, oh, we got in the lift. We hadn't even been told. Got in the lift and they were like, oh, what are you doing here? He was like, we're fighting Paul Butler. And my dad was like, no, we're fighting Casemiro. And they were like, no, he's too big.
Yeah.
And then, so we half expected something to go wrong with Casemiro.
I know that people think I'm going to get giddy with this, but there is a unified title fight in your weight division. You are the holder of the other belt. It is logical that the winner of that unified title fight is going to want to try and become undisputed champion. And if they want to do that, they've got to come through Paul Butler.
100%, mate. Let's go. What are we in the sport for? Listen, I always set myself goals, win a world title. I won the world title. I wanted to win a second world title because I didn't get the chance to defend it. I've done that. Inoue and Donaire boxing for 3 world titles in the Ring magazine belt. I've got the WBO, 1 left to collect.
Mm-hmm.
Just let's go. Like, do you know what I mean? It sets me for life. That's what I'm in the sport for as well. I'm in the sport to earn some good money out of it.
Of course.
And it's a fight that I want myself. I'd be stepping in the ring with whoever wins it. They're both going to go down as greats. They're both going to go down as legends. So, listen, I've always said I'd fight anyone in the world. And that still stands today.
I think the beautiful thing about it is, obviously, you're working with Richard Schaeffer. Richard Schaeffer, I think, advises Donaire, and I think he's loosely connected to Inoue as well. So it just seems so logical. And as rightfully as you've said, right, politics and nonsense gets in the way of a lot of fights in the world of boxing. But this one just makes absolute sense. The unified champion, do you want to become undisputed? Because that's a very rare opportunity in this game. Do you want to become undisputed? There you go. This is the guy that holds the other belt. It makes a ton of cash. The eyes of the world would be on it because, like you just said, either one of those two are going to go into the Hall of Fame at some point. It just makes, it ticks so many boxes. Do you reckon you could get him to the UK, mate? I know that, you know, maybe a few of your fans might fancy a little trip to Japan or Vegas or something like that, but what about a little trip to somewhere in the UK?
Well, do you know what? It'd be amazing if he came to the UK, but I just think he's the David Beckham of Japan. And I think, I just think there's too much money over in Japan to maybe prize him away from there.
The thing is, I know that obviously we're talking about Inoue there. Last time out when these two met, because it is a rematch, Donaire gave him everything that he had, man. And Donaire's getting better. Even at his ripe old age, he's getting better. So who knows what's going to happen in this fight?
What a fight the last one was. I honestly thought Inoue would stop him after 6-7. I just thought the youth of him would take over. But Donaire came strong, man. He hit him in 9. Nearly took him out in 9 with that big right hand. He's a dangerous, dangerous fighter. He's got experience on his side, but I think maybe the youth might take over again this time.
Listen, I know that you're a very pleasant-mannered young man. Are you maybe planning a trip to be ringside? Sit there with your belt, go full Shannon Briggs on it? What are you doing?
I wouldn't mind that, yeah. Give it the old Shannon, yeah, let's go champ.
Mate, sometimes you've got to do that. You've got to kind of play the villain a little bit, haven't you? You know what I mean? Yeah. To get what you want.
I wouldn't mind flying over. I've watched a pair of them live before, but obviously with me holding the WBO world title now, then it'd be a no-brainer. So hopefully we can get something sorted and fly out.
Great stuff, Paul Butler. Always one of my favourites to speak to. One of the grittiest men in boxing. Well, Adam and I also did look at Shakur Stevenson's fight against Oscar Valdez. We talked about whether he had the prospect of becoming number one pound for pound in the world. Does he have all the wherewithal, the armory, the mentality, all those things? Adam and I talked about that, how good he looked against Oscar Valdez in Las Vegas. And we even heard from Shakur when I asked him what it was that makes him believe that he really can be, for example, like another Floyd Mayweather in the sport.
Last weekend, the WBC champion, Oscar Valdez, put his belt on the line. WBO champion, Shakur Stevenson, put his belt on the line and they went at it. We anticipated maybe a little bit more of a competitive fight. It turned out to be a bit of a one-sided showcase
from a real slick operator in Shakur Stevenson.
Well, I thought he would. And look, Oscar Valdez is no dummy. I remember commentating on him and Scott Quigg in the rain in California outside in a tennis arena. And, you know, Valdez is an aggressive, come-forward fighter who's brilliant in the pocket. And, you know, the problem you've got with him is you can't get him off you. And yet Shakur looked like a magician last weekend, and he dominated the bout. He dropped Valdez. Maybe could have finished him if he'd really wanted to, but is so comfortable in there. He makes it look so easy. And that's the reason why, you know, I said to you a week ago or a couple of weeks ago, I think it was probably 2 weeks ago on our show, that I thought he'd smoke Valdez. Maybe he didn't smoke him, but he certainly outclassed him and he outschooled him, and He goes up and up and up in my estimation. And as I said, I had him on the show 2 or 3 weeks ago and I spoke to him. And I think I was presenting that night and I interviewed him. And he just I kind of put him on the spot about why he thinks he can be the number one pound for pound in the world. And he's just got this reasoning in him where he's watching certain fighters. He's watching what Floyd did and how Floyd did things and how Terence Crawford does things, who's in the same stable as him with Brian McIntyre, the coach and the trainer. And lucidity's been a theme for me tonight with the fighters and who we've had on the show. And he's one of those guys who's got it. He's just got it. He's got it.
I think I made a statement on social media last week, and I referred to him having the elusiveness of money, as in Money Mayweather, and the nastiness of Pretty Boy Floyd Mayweather. He has got the full thing, and obviously he's a southpaw, which is absolutely a nightmare for the majority of people. He is that. He is a real student of the sweet science. It's about hitting and not getting hit, and he has got that in abundance.
Absolutely he has, and I think but that's the key for him, that he's getting better and better with every performance. Every question that's being asked of him is being answered. I think the big issue for him, as we are wont to do as observers on the sport, as commentators, as pundits, as analysts of these great young fighters coming through, is we see all those great qualities in them, and it might not be until he meets a Gervonta Davis, a Gervonta Tank Davis, or a Vasyl Lomachenko. You mentioned that fight earlier. He and the Ukrainian Vasyl Lomachenko is probably technically the best matchup on the planet in terms of skill sets with boxers. I think he probably beats Vasyl Lomachenko right now. Whether he beats someone who is capable of really pinning him in the corner, I think Davis could be the guy. That fight's unbelievable. You know, it's an unbelievable contest. It's one of the great matchups, but they have to time it right to make sure those guys get the money that they merit for that contest. And, you know, I mean, Shakur Stevenson and Tank Davis have been at it on Twitter after Saturday night's bout, and they want it, and they will meet. And
the beautiful thing about that, on the two fights that you're just comparing there, right? This is no disrespect to Gervonta Davis or Vasyl Lomachenko, both of which are competing in the weight division above where Shakur's at this moment, at 135 pounds. But neither of them are really 135 pounds fighters. They're up there because they see that there's more money up there and there's more talent around there that they can have a bit of a dance with. They're both guys that will probably operate at 130, where Shakur's at right now. So therefore, they're not beyond the realms of possibility, those particular fights, at either a weight category. You could do it at super feather, you could do it at lightweight. It doesn't really matter for me. But like you've just said, matchup-wise, they're absolutely perfect, the pair of them. One thing that I just want to pick up on that I saw a lot on social media, right? Because as you just said, in the fight with Oscar Valdez, he puts an absolute clinic on. He drops him in the sixth round. He doesn't finish him. He ends up dancing away from him in the 12th round. Now, when he's dancing away from him, there's people that were critiquing him, saying that he should have gone for the finish. And if Floyd Mayweather was in there with Oscar Valdez, he would have got a finish. Floyd Mayweather is miles ahead of where Shakur Stevens is at this moment in time. Well, hang on. Let's just hold your horses for a second, right? We are talking about a 24-year-old. That's what Shakur Stevens is right now. He's 24 years of age. He's a multi-weight world champion. He's a world champion in two weight divisions. And he has just unified the super featherweight division by beating Oscar Valdez, the WBC champion. If you go back and look at Floyd's career,
yeah,
Now, with hindsight, it looks amazing from this point backwards. But if you look at when he did stuff by the ages, he wasn't unifying divisions until he was 29 years of age, Floyd Mayweather. So in my opinion, Shakur Stevenson is well on the path to doing something very, very special. He's got to stay focused. He's got to stay straight. He's got to stay in the gym. He's got to stay working. And he's got to keep delivering the performances that we saw last weekend. If he can do that, if he can keep moving forward, in 10 years from now, when he's 34 years of age, we'll be looking back at a guy that's probably picked up world championships in another two, maybe three world weight divisions and unified far more divisions. He's on the path for something very, very special.
Yeah, and I think, again, I go back to timing. You could put him in now with Tank Davis, and he might beat Tank Davis in a very clever fight, but it might not resonate with the mainstream. And I think what we want to do, and what I say we, what his promoters will want to do, he's with Top Rank, is, as you say, he's 24. He's still so young. Make him resonant with the American public. Make people aware over a period of time, over the next 2 or 3 years, that this is a rare talent, that this is a rare talent worth watching. This is a rare talent in a sport that is incredibly difficult, in which you can be legally killed, yeah? In which he's able to be in there as comfortable as a person, cleaning their teeth in the morning, brushing their teeth, and walking to the office and doing a day's work. That's how comfortable he is. He doesn't have to move from the chair. He's so gifted. It's hard to put into words properly.
Do you think, in your opinion, because this is a relevant question for where society's at right now, it seems that everybody has a shorter attention span now than they maybe did 10, 15, 20 years ago with what we're experiencing with social media. So what we see with Gervonta Davis, prime example. When Gervonta Davis fights, he will deliver at some point in the fight a viral moment that will exist in your phone that you can watch the morning after. It'll only take you 30 to 60 seconds to watch and you go, wow.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.